Boker Tov, everybody. It is great to see everyone. We're going to be starting a new series now as we move towards the Yomim Noraim. We call the Teshuvah Diaries. As we move towards Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we're going to focus on a few individuals and the process of the Teshuvah, somewhat through the story, somewhat through Halacha as well, as it relates to their particular story. So what we're going to be doing is we're choosing three individuals whose journey is particularly painful and particularly long. And we're going to be taking a look at part of that journey. And today's topic is Yosef and the brothers. And we're going to see this is actually quite closely related to the Yom HaNoraim as well. It will serve as the format for one of the aspects of the Yom HaNoraim as well. First, I'd like to start off by thanking Ira and Susan Wegg, who are sponsoring today's shir, in honor of their granddaughter, Tehila Tova, Tehila Tova Gluck. To Daniel and Dr. Aliza Gluck, who Baruch Hashem just came back recently from the hospital and is now bringing joy in the home, not just from afar. And Be'ezras Hashem, God willing, the journey as it's been upwards should continue to be ever more upwards in health and in spirituality. Be'ezras Hashem, thank you for always being here. Let's start our learning together. So we're not going to get too much into the nitty gritty of the sin of the chet of Yosef. We're going to be looking at the reparations afterwards. But suffice to say that I'm sure we've all had fights with our siblings, but I don't imagine that any of us have sold them down to a southern country. But this seems to be a very hard line to cross back. It seems to have been something so irreparable, something so terrible, that it's very hard to imagine how one could ever broach that topic as well. So what I'd like to do is look at a few attempts, a few moments where the brothers go through some of the emotions of trying to work things out and how that actually plays itself out throughout history and whether that was successful or not. So first, immediately after the sin, we do hear echoes of remorse. So we do hear ideas where the Torah tells us that they weren't 100% comfortable, they did not rationalize their sin. As an example, we hear at the beginning of Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Aleph in Bereishis, where we hear about Yehuda Vayi Boisahi Vayered Yehuda Me'eisechov Vayet Ad Ish Adulami Ushmochira. We hear that Yehuda is going to a different place and he's going down. So going down could just mean is that whichever orientation of the map is, he's going south, which is a very tenable possibility. However, Rashi tells us that that is not exactly the case. Rashi tells us a little more than that. In the second source, he says, "Lama nismucha parsha zulakan." Why is this the first thing which immediately follows the sale of Yosef? Hivsik hivsik b'parshas shel Yosef. Before continuing with Yosef's in travails in Egypt, lelamed shehridu echov migdulasoi kisharo b'tzoras avihem. When they saw how much their father was suffering, they demoted Yehuda from his position as leader. Amru ata amra amarta lemachroi. If you were the one who told it to sell him, if you had said anything else, he would have listened to you. Oh, it's such a terrible thing to be a leader. It's the same kind of thing when it comes to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai managed to escape Yerushalayim and have a conversation with Vespasian, and he made three requests. And one of the return liyavne v'chachomer, he asked the line of Rabban Gamliel, the healing of Rabbi Tzadok. And people say, so the question was, so why did he ask for the salvation of Yerushalayim? So the Gemara says in Gittin that he wasn't able, he realized that it wasn't in his realm of possibility. At that point, at the heat of the moment, that was not a request he could have made. But it's the same kind of thing. You know, 20-20 hindsight, everybody says. Yehuda, if you just been stronger, right, as we grabbed our pitchforks, you know, and torches. So it's very hard to, these are very hard decisions, but nonetheless, this feeling is sometimes what happens to us as well after we do, there's something which is bad, and even in a group which is bad, what we'd like to do first is we like to find the person responsible, right? So we like to try to find somebody that we can pin it on, and maybe the CEO will have to resign so that we can make sure that we've discharged our guilt sufficiently. So this seems to be the first step. So we see these feelings of remorse, but at this point in time, there's no actual encounter with Yosef. They, you know, and for all possible, you know, we'll call it theories, they don't have no way of accessing. I mean, at the last, they sold them on a camel down to Egypt. There's no GPS tracking device. So how are they going to find him anyway? So this is a, but the feelings certainly are, they are much more acute than they imagined because of the suffering of their father. Later on, as they go down to Egypt, and they're in Egypt, they go down individually through different gates to go get bread, to get oichel, and this is really now a significant amount of time later on. Yosef, at this point in time, has been promoted to the highest, the second to highest rank in all of Egypt, and he recognizes them, they don't recognize him, and he summons them in front of him and makes all kinds of horrible accusations, heinous accusations, espionage. There are Canaanites coming to try to break the system, and they realize that as they make their excuses in their real innocence, because they really are innocent, and they realize that they're not convincing this individual, they have a conversation between each other in Hebrew, in Iloshon Ivri, and this conversation they think is unknown to the viceroy. And this is what they say in source 3. Vayomru ish elachiv, aval ashemim anachnu, we are guilty, al achino, ashero inu tzoras nafshoi b'yischananoi, eleinu v'loi shamanu, al kein bo eleinu atzor azois. When our brother was begging us as we were at the lip of the cave, of the pit, and he was begging for his freedom and we didn't listen, and that's the reason why we are in the state of affairs that we are right now. So that guilt is still resting with them. We hear an extra detail of the story which we never heard before, which is that Yosef was begging, which makes a whole lot of sense, but the Torah never revealed that detail until now, their reflections on the minutia, on that experience. And this is also something that we do as well, which is that we feel in a certain sense that we are cursed. We feel that there's something that we deserve because we have driven ourselves down to such a dark road. And Reuven now drives the last nail in and says, yes, and I told you not to hurt him. And if you just listened to me, we wouldn't be in this predicament right now in Egypt, being accused of being spies. Now, so on the one hand, there's an element of accusation here, there's an element of guilt, there's an element of feeling like one is, so to speak, cursed into some sort of terrible, terrible narrative in history. But what is interesting is that they don't realize that Yosef's listening. So this is the closest we have right now of a conversation between the parties, of having done something terrible, but they don't know, they don't have the wherewithal to be able to have that conversation yet. Because they think that the only person in the room who could possibly understand this internal Canaanite or a Hebrew conversation is the translator who couldn't care less, is an employee, right? So, but they didn't realize that the viceroy himself is listening. So Yosef goes out of the way and he weeps hearing this, and he comes back and he imprisons Shimon as a guarantor, and he sends them on their way back to Canaan. What is interesting is some of the Mepharshim ask at this point in time is, Yosef, if you see that they've gone through so much contrition, then surely that should be enough for you to end the game, right? At this point in time, okay, take off the beard, right? Tell them who you are. That's it. You've achieved the end goal, right? That's what the Mepharshim asked. The Ramban says he couldn't do that because Yosef at this point in time was guided by one ideal, and that was the fulfillment of his dreams, which he felt was a prophecy. And in order to facilitate that, there were two dreams that had to be that first. His brothers bowed to him, and then his father bowed to him. His brothers had not all bowed to him because Binyamin's back home, so he needed to carry on with this feigned attempt in order to be able to bring them here. But at this point in time, at least we have we'll call it the starting point of almost, we'll call it a virtual dialogue, because it's only through the one-way mirror that the brothers try to, so to speak, apologize or even blame to deal with this.
So are they really showing contrition? Yeah, they really, they're not upset about what they did, they're just upset of the result of what happened because of what they did.
Yep, that's true. So, like as a parent, so imagine that your children are having this kind of conversation. Now, God forbid, not about selling one another, but let's say you overhear the children, and they've just been grounded, they've just been suspended, they've just, whatever it is that there's something happened, and they're saying, oh boy, it was because we were doing that inside with the ball near the window, like Dad said, right? So then at this point in time, as a parent, would that be enough? Will that be enough? And sometimes maybe your answer might be yes. Maybe yes, they understood that the punishment had its effect. You know, and Yosef is clearly moved by this because he's crying, right? So he feels that something now. Yes, of course, this was a stick. It wasn't necessarily, you know, altruistic. And that's part of what we have to get to see will they ever do enough for Yosef to ever feel that they did enough? But at this point in time, it has moved Yosef. Just the reason why he's not moved fully is because of at least one or two other reasons. One is the Ramban's example. Now, finally, it comes to a four, and Yosef then just brings them back, and Binyamin, and the whole business, and he sets up Binyamin, puts the cup in the chalice in the backpack, and then he sends his agent back, brings them to Egypt, accuses Yosef of Binyamin of high treason, and then the beginning of Ayigash ensues, and Yehuda makes his incredible speech of defense for to Binyamin. How can I go back to my father without the boy? My father will die. At which point in time, at the top of page 3, we hear now Yosef's revealing. This is the first time they've had a conversation in all these years. And this is now, at this point in time, obviously, Yehuda has not apologized for anything because Yosef doesn't know he's speaking to Yosef. But Yosef nonetheless says the following, Yosef and he sends everybody out, and he tells them, he raises his voice in crying, so even the people who are absent hear Yosef's words. Yosef says, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And they were not able to answer him because they were scared in front of him. I am Yosef, the brother you sold down to Egypt. Don't become sad that you sold me here. Hashem sold me in order to facilitate the economic resurrection of the entire world. That's Yosef has rationalized what has happened. So there's a lot of things to think about here. You'll notice, and in this conversation, you don't have the voice of the brothers. The only thing we hear about them is they cry, right? So there's no dialogue, so to speak. We hear Yosef's expression of things. And as Yosef talks about it, already he is pulling in, we'll call it, a very spiritual view of things. So I understand why this happened. It was necessary. Hashem helped me. I was the necessary stepping stone for the world. And he was. If he wasn't there at the right time, the world would be now in a severe drought. The whole Middle East would be, the economy would be collapsing. So this is what Yosef says. Amazing, amazing conversation. We don't hear the brother's response except for cry. Now, what is interesting about this is that the few things that are worthwhile noting is why are they crying? So the obvious reason would be is, well, they feel the guilt and the shame of all those years suddenly coming to a fore. That makes a lot of sense. But it seems that there's more than that. It seems that it's not just the guilt and the shame. It seems it has to do with his words. So the first part is Ani Yosef, right? So that part is obvious. That's the necessary first step. But the next step doesn't seem to be a logical continuation. Because he says, Ha'orav Icham, is my father still alive? Now, if you followed Yehuda's speech, which he just gave to us, the beginning of Ayigash, the whole speech was about his father. So that seems to have been covered. So why is Yosef asking this? In the first thing he asks his brothers as the encounter happens. So there's a number of suggestions. One suggestion, which is pretty shocking, is the Ksava Kabbalah. Rav Yaakov Zvi Mecklenburg, he says, in source 4, he says, Arvi Chai, Shu'alohem gezeh, ki choshav ulai ma she'omru adheno she'omru savihem, biyogon hoyo kedei she'asigu mevukosham ba'ashovas binyamin, uve'emes avino enenu chai. Maybe they were lying the whole time. Maybe dad is not alive. Maybe they're using dad as an emotional leverage point to get Binyamin back. Ah, how do you know? Why would they do something so terrible? The answer is they already did. Right? So Yosef says, is it possible he's alive? So is it possible he loved through all these different sorrows that you caused for him? But if you think about this for a moment, it makes a whole lot of sense. Being why does he know that they have a track record of lying? Is because he knows that somehow they must have made some sort of excuse for when they threw him down to jail, when they sent him down the river. And if that's the case, the people are means towards whatever ends they need in their conversation. So maybe dad's gone. Maybe you're just using him as a way to be able to get back Binyamin. So there's a real accusation here. So far from this being a resolution, this is actually more acrimony, if you think about it, right? This is according to the way that the Ksav HaKabbalah, also the Torah Tumim reads this in the continuing following paragraph, is this is a further accusation. If you think about it, the rift is getting further apart rather than closer together. However, there is another fascinating perspective, and that is the Midrash Rabbah tells us based on Gemara and Chagiga on Daf Dalet. The Midrash says in Source 6, famously, "Vayitin is kolay bivchim v'lo yachlu echov la'anoyz asoy, abba koin bardu la'omar oy lonu liyam yom adin oy lonu miyom atoychecha." So Abba Kohen Bardala would say, whenever he read this pasuk, he would cry because he would say, "Woe upon us for the day of judgment! Woe upon us for the day of rebuke!" When he heard this pasuk, now it's strange because where's the rebuke in the pasuk? So if we're going in the trajectory of the Ksav HaKabbalah, the rebuke is, "Are you using my father again as just a pawn?" But well, perhaps it's a little deeper than that. And it goes back to, I remember something that happened to me a number of years ago. I was at the time in Israel, the way it worked was that you'd go in and you'd get a little petek, a little tourist visa. Tourist visa is this little blue-green sheet, which would be operational for 3 months, right? But the word on the street is that they would allow you out of the country up to 6 months, right? So they give a little bit of a reprieve. I don't remember what time it was. So the way it was is I had to be there for 5 months. So I figured it's not worth going through the whole process of the student visa because I came at different times of the year. I came from a different country. We're foreigners. And so instead of getting the student visa, I thought I'll just go out on the tourist. It's fine, right? After all, I'm leaving the country. Fine. So I get to the airport and you get to passport control, and it's not like it is today where you put your passport in and it goes a beep and then the doors open. It was, there were agents, right? So I try to pick the most innocent looking agent, and I walk up to the glass and she says, "Where's your visa?" So I said, this is my visa. She said, no, this is a tourist visa. You need to have a visa to be there. So I said, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't know. She says, "You did know." So I said, I thought this is sufficient. And she says, "You did know because I told you." And she says, "Here is my signature on your entry visa." She was the agent who signed me into the country. So now this is a very important lesson. And that's what there's many lessons to be learned over here. But the one thing which is really important to learn from this is that's what's happening over here. Says the Netziv, that's exactly what's happening. Yosef says to them, look, he says, you're crying now and you're saying, "Our father, our father, our father," all the sorrows, all the things, and Binyamin, you're going to take him, his favorite wife, and this child. And he says, And what about me? And what about me? You there I was on the side of the pit and you're pulling me out, you're throwing me over the back of a camel. At that point in time, what about Avi, my father, favorite child, special wife? Then you weren't thinking about it. So what Abba Kohen Bardala was saying was that Oy lanu liyom hadin, Oy lanu liyom atoychecha means there are going to be times in life where all the excuses we make are going to be undone by ourselves. Because it's ourselves, it's our own actions which have undermined our very narrative. Right? So we have to be very, very careful of this. It's a pretty shocking set of affairs. And this is part of it's actually one of my favorite quotations is Ralph Waldo Emerson, who says, "Your actions speak so loudly I cannot hear what you're saying." And that's what Yosef is really essentially saying. Right? Your actions have shown that your words are empty, and that's the Yom HaTaychecha. At this point in time, though, we don't have an apology, so we don't have resolution yet. We have the brothers being put in a... Now, I think everybody who had been confronted with this would cry, right? Without this kind of request would cry. But we don't have yet, at this point in time, people coming forward to have this conversation. And we look through the rest of the... Yeah, John?
You left us a cliffhanger. Did you get out of the country?
I forgot to tell you, yes. So I was in the pound for 3 months now. This is a special room. No, so actually what happened was I had a student visa I'd forgotten. I actually had it in my passport. She didn't find it. I forgot about it. And I already had it for a full year. So I was all right. So I was fine. Thank you for your empathy. I feel vindicated. Anyways, all the lessons we learned. If the proverb had been in Edel. Anyways, okay, so nonetheless. So now what's interesting is that everything that follows seems to be very practical. Yosef then tells the brothers, go back, don't wait, don't tarry, go call father, tell father I'm here, we bring everybody down here, I will set you up. And then it's about practicality, making sure that they're shepherds, they go in front of the Pharaoh, and they tell it, he introduces his father, and his father's over there. Yosef continues guiding state affairs, his father's in Goshen. There seems to be like a, we'll call it a practical continuation. We don't ever find a conversation that's had afterwards. And perhaps if we were in this position of the brothers, we wouldn't want to have that conversation. This is a very difficult conversation to have. And we all are the same. We don't like confrontation. We don't like confrontation. And so nobody seems to have ever come to Yosef's palace and said, you know, Yosef, we were thinking about this whole business, and you know that whole episode that, you know. So nobody ever seems to have that conversation. When that conversation does happen, it seems to be much later on. And it's motivated by fear. Because what happens at the very end of Sefer Bereishis, they go and they bury Yaakov Avinu, and at which point they come back from the land of Canaan, and now the brothers come and confront Yosef. And this is our second confrontation, in which they make the following presentation, source 9. Vayirachei Yosef ki meis avihem. The brothers saw that their father had died. Vayomru lo, lu yistamenu Yosef. Maybe Yosef is going to hold a grudge against us. Vashev yashiv lanu es kol ha-ra'a asher gomalanu asa. And he's been waiting all these years, while father's still around, not to do anything. And now the judgment is about to come. They said, you know, father commanded before his death, saying, and they said, father told us that we should tell you that you should not, treat us too harshly.
That was another lie.
No, so it's an interesting question that Mepharshim say, was it a lie? That's the question. We're servants to you. Is this a lie or not? Is the Mepharshim debate? Did father really tell them? Perhaps he did. Perhaps he didn't. And Yosef's only hearing it now. Maybe they're making up because of abject fear. They think that there's no accountability.
Why would
So that, you know, it comes back to the famous story about this is my one of my favorite stories, not about me this time. And so there's a particular town, a little shtot in Eastern Europe, and the Rov, who's been with them for well over 50 years, is niftar, and now they need it. There's a void of leadership. So what happens is they automatically, you know, they install the eldest, the Bukhar, as the Rov of the city. And during the week of the Shiva, what happens is that the second son of the rabbi comes to everybody and says, we need to call a very important town meeting. It's very important. The Shiva Tova era, the council, the city come together. And he calls them together and he says, I have to tell you. He says, I had for the last 3 nights, my father came to me in a dream and he said, you really should be the Rav of the city. So he said, wow, the father in the Shiva comes during the dream to tell him he should be the Rav. He says, we wouldn't want to disobey the sainted father. And so there they said, we must do this. And then one of the elderly men at the back of the shul says, you know, if your father had wanted us to appoint you as the Rav, he probably should have come to us in the dream, right? So, and there's a lot to be said about that, right? So this relates to certain religions, right? You know, where prophets tell what God said to them about other people believing them, right? So one has to be careful with these kind of things. So you know, that is one of the, we'll call, logical flaws in the argument they make. But nonetheless, it's a terrible thing, because if you think about it, what it does is it brings back all the emotions afresh. You know, you think that maybe it's simmered down, and this goes to show you just such an important rule in life, and that is that when you put something under the carpet, it doesn't just evaporate. It doesn't, right? It doesn't. It's all there. It's all still there. It hasn't been confronted. It hasn't been dealt with. They try to put it over here, and what is interesting is coming back to Paul's comment over here. This is clearly motivated by abject fear. And what is interesting is, as well, is it doesn't include the words,
we're sorry.
We're sorry. Right now, the Torah doesn't have the word sorry. Right? So there's no translation. But the word we would be looking for is we're sin chatanu, right? Or the idea of some sort of description of vidui, right? That's not what we see over here. What we just have is at least waive the punishment that we deserve. That's all they're saying. But they haven't yet actually said, you know, we were wrong. It's very hard for people to say that. So Yosef is crying about this. And Yosef then says to him, Yosef, Al tiru ki atachas elokim ani. Am I in the place of Hashem? V'atem chashavtem olai ro'o elokim chashava l'tova. L'man asos asei k'yam hazeh l'achi yosam rav. V'ato al tiru onochi al chalkel eschim etamchem v'yanachim osom edaber ala alibom. And he says, I will continue to sustain you. I will look after you and your children intergenerationally. That gives them the idea. And I'm going to, and you spoke to their hearts. What is interesting, just as an interesting aside, Rabbi Penna actually said a set of Divine Torah a number of years ago. I asked him about it on Friday, which is a very interesting point that he makes. He says, when he says Asachas Elokimani, the way we usually understand that means is, am I the divine judge who's going to exact punishment from you? I mean, am I going to like move everything around? It could also mean on the other side, he says Asachas Elokimani, am I a divine agent who doesn't deserve an apology? I mean, am I so spiritual that you think I can just, it was water off the duck's back? That's also the other part of it, meaning you can't even apologize? That's there's that element over here, which is a very fascinating read of this, John.
Isn't it possible, I don't know if this is a Jewish concept, but you ask forgiveness because you feel like you deserve forgiveness. Isn't it possible if they're like, what we did is so terrible, there's no coming back?
Yeah, to a certain degree, I think that there's in the human psyche, we sometimes lock ourselves away from it, you know, and we say that it's irreparable. We have to see that kind of logic or that narrative is very dangerous. Just so we'll see in a second why.
Well, they are speaking in Yaakov's voice. They're saying Yaakov told us that we have a pesha. We're admitting it to you. Our father said we had pesha, we had chet.
Okay, so Ari, you're being very, very, yes. So Ari is making a good suggestion that our father said that this was a pesha, this was a sin. And so speaking, so maybe there is a certain element of it, but they can't say it themselves. It's amazing. If you ever have, it's so hard, if you've ever had a really deep conflict, and imagine a conflict which lasts over years, we should never have been involved in this. And you try to get to have that conversation, it's so hard to say the real things. It's so hard. And maybe what they're doing is they're cloaking their conversation, their father's words, but they still can't get there. What interest?
Crying from that.
Right. Perhaps the crying is their avoidance of that point. Exactly. I want to take one step further. To me, the most fascinating thing over here is the word Vayinachem. Because what does the word Vayinachem mean? Vayinachem. What's the word? Yosef's doing the Vayinachem here. What does that word mean?
Comfort.
But there's another meaning to the word Nacham. Anybody know as well? It's so interesting. It also means regret. It's so interesting. If you think about the word Nacham, it actually frames both sides of the conversation. Their regret and his comfort are two sides of the conversation. Is that interesting? Rav Hirsch picks up on this. Listen to the words of Rav Hirsch. He says, Nacham has two meanings, remorse and consolation. That's both sides of this conversation. Their common denominator is that they are indicative of a change of mind. Until now, I thought that I was right. Perhaps I was even proud of my actions. Suddenly I recognize that I committed an injustice of which I should be ashamed. This is remorse. Similarly, true consolation is only such that convinces the mourner that this too leads to ultimate good. Unlike the consolation of the Babylonians, the Gemara tells in Baba Kama that they said, oh, what can we do? This is all terrible. He says, thus, Yosef too tries to change his brother's view of the past. God has made you an instrument for my hands, so many people's, other people's good fortune. Right? And that's why this is happening, which is interesting. According to the way Rav Hirsch reads it, is both of them are a notion of a changing of perspective. Remorse is that the past was always so terrible. We're a function of all that we'll call terrible trajectory. And Yosef saying, no, there was another perspective, and this is trying to reshape it. If you think about that, even with Rav Hirsch's perspective, there still hasn't been the dialogue. There still hasn't been the conversation of, I'm sorry, you're forgiven. That still hasn't happened yet. Chatanu, and that perhaps is why Yosef's crying, even though Yosef is making it better. He's smoothing it over. And by the way, I'm sure we've had conversations with people, and they say, you know, it was all for the best. You know, you ashamed to be in public, it was all for the best. Is that really the resolution you're looking for? Not really. The resolution you'd be looking for is that was extremely painful, and it hurt me for many years, He says, but you know what? I forgive you. That's the real. So on both sides, they're not really digging down deeply, which leads us to Deuteronomy, yeah.
But one thing about it is that what you just made, except that Yosef did tell them that it worked out.
Yes.
So maybe they kind of thought that it wasn't just like it was for the best, but he gave a concrete example. So maybe they felt, okay, kind of worked out. We didn't mean to do it, but...
I know, but if you think about it, they're both throwing each other bones. Think about it, right? So they're not really saying we sinned, and he's not really saying you're forgiven. Right, if you think about that. Yeah.
So I have another halach here in this studio. So the question, of course, is where do you believe that actually the brothers are not just making it up?
Where did it come from?
Pasuk says in Yachal, so there are those who look for this statement in Yachal.
In the blessings.
So I think most, the suggestion I didn't find satisfying, but there is one very satisfying phrase that makes the whole parasha work. And that is, Yaakov says, Yosef, Ko Nizirecha. There are two pshatim in Nizir. One is Nizirus, but most of the Mefarshim explain Nazir to mean king. And if we go to the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, at the end of Perek Beis, he talks about the relationship between a king and the people. And he says, V'yispol torcham u'masam u'tunosam, the kitzbam kasher yisa ha'omenes yomei. They're coming to him and says, Father said, you're the king.
And this is the job of the king.
You have to be sober of us. Now, I'll get back to this in a minute, but then the whole parsha works. Because then the next pasuk says, hinen l'chol avadim. They throw themselves. It's a non sequitur, either one or the other. But no, it's not. What they're saying to him is, if you play your part, and being the king of Israel the way a king is supposed to be.
We'll play our parts.
We will play our part and you'd be your avodim. Not slaves, but subjects. So the whole conversation here has nothing to do with...
Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's all about the role of the king and its subjects.
Beautiful. Actually, now I remember, Abby gave this as a Dvar Torah. No, this is your Dvar Torah. Video of Dvar Torah on the daily Dvar Torah last year. And this is a beautiful idea. Just for those who are listening in over here, the way that Abby Dienstag has explained the dialogue is that where was it that they're making up that they should be that Yosef should be more of a benefactor and let them live is when he declared when Yaakovina gave the blessing when Lekod Kod Nezirechav, which refers to the crown upon Yosef's head, and the Rambam Paskins, the way a king is supposed to act is in a way that he's going to soivel, he's going to allow all the Torah and the Masa of the people, and therefore that explains why the next pasuk is in Enel Lechol Avadim, not as servants, but as subjects, because our role is to be your subjects, your role is to be servile us, and that's where Yaakov had actually said this. So it's a beautiful...
But there's no good point is now that I realize the conversation, this is not about Shiva at all.
Correct, and therefore they have actually dodged the bullet. They have not yet had the conversation.
This is another example. They're just trying to move... Where they say what happened, and this is what Yosef is saying to them also. These are all ways of
avoiding
the problem.
Correct.
Another way of looking at this is saying that when Yosef is saying, they're saying this was part of God's plan. We acted out of character because Hashem wanted this to happen. This really wasn't our behavior. Meaning,
it's an excuse we make.
Again, the excuse is really, this is Hashem working behind the scenes to make something happen. So we're not really liable here, so let's move past it. But
right.
Again, it's another thing of trying to... And Yosef agrees. Yosef says, okay.
It's easier on both sides not to confront. So they're essentially, as pointed out, this is not... And so what's the difficulty of this? So this it takes me back. This is where we get now to the difficult part of our conversation today. Okay, so folks, this has all been smooth sailing up to now, fascinating ideas. Now we get to the hard part of this of our learning today. So folks, this is where it digs into us and it's going to hurt us and it's going to cut us. So the truth is that I remember a number of years ago I read an article about a particular surgeon who was a burn surgeon. So he was in a unit where he would deal with people who had severe burns. And the way he would do it is he would have to do skin grafts for terrible burns. People in factories, houses burning down, God forbid, terrible things, lo aleinu. And he had a particular method where he would, before dealing with a person who was going for emergency surgery, he would sit down and do a meditation with them. And in the meditation, he would first calm them down, and then he would also ask them to forgive. He would ask them to forgive. Why forgive? So you realize that most burn victims or severe burn victims have a tremendous amount of rage. And the rage is either about somebody who is negligent and many times about themselves. Why did I shouldn't have, I should have been more careful, I shouldn't have stepped there. Whatever that rage was about. And he found that actually there's a certain percentage of all the people who were willing to go through a meditation were more likely to have the skin graft take and to heal faster. That's what he found. Shocking thing. Which means that part of the damage of holding that rage is the damage on self. And this comes down, brings us to now the crucial part of this we'll call it lack of dialogue. Comes down to, I came across this a few years ago, and I was just so shocked when I came across this. Source 13, the very end, the last pasuk in Vayigash, when the tension's at its crescendo, Menashe turns to the brothers and he says to them, as they now think that that Binyamin may have already stolen the cup, and now they're coming back and they think this is it. He says, "Vayomer chalel elimi asas davar zayis ha'isha she'nimtza gavia it biyadol hu yel li le'eved." So whoever had the chalice, meaning Binyamin, is going to be the servant. Va'atem alu l'shalom alavichem. You go back in peace to your father, right? And everything's just fine. You know, it'll be a smaller family, but at least you won't have a criminal on your hands. That's what essentially he's saying. Says Rabbeinu Bechaye, no, we misread that pasuk. What does it mean? Atash alu l'shalom alavichem. So source 14. Alderach he says alderach haKabbalah ma shenechtum aparsha zois bepasuk alu l'shalom alavichem. Zeremes la asura haruge malchus asher alu l'shalom el avihem shebashamayim asher achash nislabnu v'nitzrufu mecheto shel Yosef. Not you. Your generations. Generations later on, there's going to be people coming out of each of you who's going to have to die to go in peace back to Father in heaven to remove the sin. Which means that the debt of this unanswered conversation has still going to echo throughout history until it finds its resolution. Which means the fact that there was no conversation, there was no ultimate forgiveness, has a ramification. In fact, the Medrash Ele Ezkara, which we read on Yom Kippur, begins with this. We have a shortened version of the Piyut, which we see on Rosh Hashanah, but here on Yom Kippur. But here at the end of the Avoda, in the Slichos area, in the Musaf of Yom Kippur, we say this, and here's the Medrash, source 15. Kach akach achar churban habayis ha peritzi ador misgayin v'amru mahev seideinu boze shenech rabbe habayis haray yesh beninu talmidei chachomim shamadrichim esoyle v'torasenu mitzvasov. So after the Beis Medrash was destroyed, many people said, why do we need a Beis Medrash after all? We still have great sages who can lead us. So therefore, then they were arrogant in such a way. Miyad nosan hakadosh baruch hu b'leiv ha-keisar shel romi lilmoid Torah. Torah z'moshim epi chachomim v'zakenim. So they gave the Caesar the intuition to start learning Torah. V'yizchir b'sefer bereshis o yoloimed ad she'igia l've'ele mishpatim. He went all the way to mishpatim. So he's doing Shnai Mikra. And he came all his way to mishpatim. V'kem she'igia l'apostol v'goyne v'ishu m'ocharai. That the apostle talks about kidnapping and selling. Miyad tzivo l'malos palteroi min ha'olim. So he fills his palace with shoes. V'sholach likro la'asar ha'chach mi'Yisrael. U'bo l'fona v'yishivon b'ketedros shel zav. And he brought them in on golden thrones. Omer lohem, oimek ha'din yesh lish'ol mikem. I have an interesting shayla for you. V'al tomru li ki im ha'din v'yavzayim es ha'mishpat. Tell me what the halacha is in such a case. Omer lohem, Arsa says, well, what's the question? What happens if you kidnap and sell another Jew? They said, naturally, it's a capital punishment. They says, now you're worthy of death. They're not around to exact punishment, but I have to fix Genesis, so you are now going to stay in their place. And then before we discuss, how is it fair? And Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol goes up to Shemayim, and he hears Me'achari Aparagot, that is in fact the law, and he comes back, and that's the decree, and he comes back, and ultimately they succumb, and they're murdered. They're murdered in heinous ways by the Caesar. Clearly linking it back to this, says Rabbi Ben Bechai, this is because it was never resolved. Now, the other way of looking at this is you could say the sin of the generation of Mechiras Yosef is still here, right? People are still acting like the brothers to Yosef and Yosef to the brothers, in this generation, and that's reflected in the leader. So it wasn't as if this was all just a echo of a sin, but it's the sin that continues because it was never resolved. The family troubles still continue, and if you read about the history of the times, that is a pretty accurate reflection, unfortunately, of the post-generation or the pre-generation and infighting as well. However, it goes a little further, and here's where it just gets very, very painful to learn, and that is the following. It says, actually, take a look at source 17. The Rabbeinu Bechaya asks on this suggestion a very poignant question. He says, this doesn't make sense. He says, Ma shehayu asara haruge malchus, v'achim ba'alei ma'aseh lo hayu ela tisha, sharei Reuven lo hiskim imahem. Think about this for a second. Why were there 10 martyrs? After all, there were only 9 sellers. Right? Let's do the math. Binyamin's at home. He's not selling his brother. Right? Yosef is the victim. So there's 2 gone. Reuven says, let's not kill him. Reuven goes off. As Reuven has already explained to us in Egypt in the experience, I told you not to do anything. He wasn't involved. So there are only 9 brothers left. So why is always Asura Haruge Malchus? That's an unfair number. It should really be 9.
He didn't stop
them. So you say, well, maybe it might be that Reuven should have done more, right? So Reuven was there. He could have avoided that. He did stop them killing him, but he should have stopped the sale itself. The sale was also a capital punishment.
He also threw them in the pit, which got them to put them in the pit, which facilitated.
Right, the pit is the, yes.
And he, you know, his hands aren't exactly clean.
Right, so you may say Reuven really is kind of there to sort of, he tied him to the railway tracks, even though the train wasn't here yet.
And he left to deal with his own problems when he should have been there.
Right, so his absence. So we have a lot of reasons why Reuven could be still in the dock.
I thought maybe it was because Yosef kidnapped Binyamin. That's number 10.
So here's what he says. He says, on similar lines, he says, Yeshlomar. He says, "Lefi shegam Yosef chata ki chata achim boy, halo yahu haya asiba kashaya mishtarer al eachav hanichbadim agdalim imenu haya machis lasam mispar kenegdal mechala moisav vekevon shaya bichlal bechet haya bichlal einish." He hurt them too. He tortured them afterwards. This whole experience that he put them through, lakach nifkad olav gam kain. So therefore he says, and therefore, by the way, he brings in the Reuven suggestion at the end over here as a possibility, and that he tortured them as well. I want to take it one step further. If you go back to the previous Rabbeinu Bechaya, I notice these are all in different places. In the last, in source 16, he says, "Take care, shes kiroloi aviv bacha legoidel ava nichmu rachma vine echal bikshu mimenu mechila v'loi beyer akosev shemachal lohem." Rabbeinu Bechaya says, in a certain sense, what they were trying to do in their father's voice was ask for forgiveness. And Yosef just said, it's all right. He didn't say, I forgive you. And because he said, it's all right, and he didn't forgive them, he didn't really forgive them. And because he didn't really forgive them, he was the 10th of the martyrs. He was equally part of avoiding the conversation of apology as much as they were as well. Which is why on Yom Kippur, the day of the holiest day of the year, when we talk about Mechila, I think it's really a message to all of us, is that sometimes we're equally as guilty, whether we're the victim or the perpetrator. Where if we're the perpetrator and we don't ask for Mechila, or if we're the victim and we don't say that we forgive people, we equally are in charge or are responsible of these cycles, which never are released. And so perhaps Yosef and the brothers is not just a story about forgiveness, it's an archetype of the societies we lead and the relationships that we create and break, which we ought to have more care for. So there's a lot to think of, a lot to appreciate. Next week as we approach Rosh Hashanah, which will be just almost Erev Rosh Hashanah, we're going to start on the topic of David. We'll look at David's particular path as well as we try to fix ourselves.